Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network. I drink it up.
Welcome to the Bag Pod, everyone. The first of what we hope is many. This is the sports edition with Eugene. What's up, Eugene?
Not too much. What's going on, Bagman? I'm glad to be here. I'm glad we're doing this second time around here, Sports Bag Pod.
Yeah, no doubt. We're coming hot off the heels of the BCS Championship game, so I'm sure.
Yes, full of excitement.
Most of this podcast will probably be about that and or college football. We'll try not to rehash anything that we previously discussed in the first one, but let's just get some initial reactions here, Eugene. What did you think about that BCS SEC West rematch championship game?
Well, I got to say I was extremely disappointed. I mean, you know, I was one of those people who originally was kind of resigned to the game. I mean, I probably would have liked to see someone else playing it, but I thought, hey, these are the two best teams. Let's see them play. But I mean, LSU, where, I mean, what was, I don't even know. In every phase of the game, they got dominated. I don't understand what happened in that game. And it seemed like Alabama, the thing to me that was crazy, the whole time I kept thinking, like, wow, Alabama is dominating on offense. But then you would look at the score and it'd be like 9-0.
6-0.
So it was one of those kind of games, man. It was a dirty defensive game, I guess, like the first one, but LSU, for whatever reason. And I don't know if this is maybe punishment for their schedule. I mean, they play a long, tough schedule. Maybe they're gassed out.
I don't know about that. I think this game was, the outcome of this game mainly was due to two factors. The first of which being that Alabama got 6 weeks, to prepare for
True.
The rematch. You know, cause the SEC, or I guess, you know, the regular season college football schedule ended in early December, so, you know, it's at least a month, if not, I believe someone said 6 weeks.
Right.
So you've got that. And then also, to me, really, it was just the difference between having a competent quarterback and not.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, Jordan Jefferson was horrible. I mean, that little shovel pass type situation, I mean, I don't know what he was trying to do there, just throwing it away. I mean, McCarron, too, I have to say I was impressed with him. I mean, a freshman coming in, 23-34 to 234, but no interceptions. And I feel like that's big because coming in, you know, obviously the whole LSU defense is big, but they got the Honey Badger back there. They got Claiborne, like everyone's talking about the quality of their of their secondary unit. And so I think, you know, to see McCarron come in and really do work and for them to go at that secondary, I thought was, it said a lot about Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, McCarron, I believe, is a sophomore. But still, yeah, a young guy, nonetheless, first year starting. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if maybe, I watched basically the entire game. I think I missed, like, the first couple minutes in the first mm-hmm. quarter. And, I mean, I don't know if LSU's offense was just poor, like, every single pass almost was either a quick out or a screen or something. Like, they were not throwing the ball down the field. Now, I don't know if that's a reflection on Jordan Jefferson's inability to throw the ball accurately or if that's just poor coaching. But
I mean, I think it almost has to be
so bland. And on the other side, McCarron, at least they did take some shots down the field, and McCarron hit the throws that he needed to hit. He had a couple of those fade routes, you know, 20-yard fade routes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, his wide receivers did make some spectacular catches. But still, I mean, he really was the game changer. If he had not played well, this would have been, I mean, this might have been 0-0 going into overtime, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's true for sure. I mean, Richardson, if he wouldn't have broke that big run when he did, which in and of itself was almost like a broken play, he just had great vision and got to the outside, then who knows if there would have even been, you know, any more significant scoring. So I think definitely, you know, you're more than correct there. But I have to say that from the point of view of LSU, I just don't understand. I just don't understand what they thought they were getting going with Jefferson, because I think really the play calling was a consequence of them not having any sort of confidence in him. Because if you looked at the couple longer plays they had, it was a lot of stuff that was sailing, that was going high. I mean, I don't know, maybe he looked totally different in practice, but you know, I guess they people, what was it, Kirk Herbstreit said, well, you know, he's athletic or whatever, but I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like he wasn't showing anything just from Jump Street, completely lethargic, getting frustrated there at the end too. You know, I mean, again, with the shovel play, if you saw afterwards, he gets up and yells at the back, you know,
really,
so I mean, come
mad about that.
So,
Jefferson, I mean, I'm not going to lie and say I watched a lot of LSU games this year, because I don't think I watched any, actually, aside from this game. But I don't know. It definitely – I mean, clearly Alabama's defense was playing some really, really solid defense. But
yes,
they just were not taking any shots whatsoever downfield. All the routes that Jefferson ended up passing were within, you know, like 3 yards of the line of scrimmage for the most part. It was completely vanilla offense.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about
killed him.
Yeah, and the thing about LSU too is in a lot of games, and I watched a fair amount of their national TV games, you know, they got a big play out of special teams, and they didn't get a big play out of special teams. I mean, obviously the Honey Badger, you know, made a name for himself doing that as well as being in the secondary, and they also got defensive big plays, but I felt like, you know, in a lot of games, because, you know, they were behind in a lot of games. In the West Virginia game in particular, I remember they were behind. And it's like, then there was maybe a big play, and all of a sudden,
and then the
you
momentum
know,
shifted. Yeah, I remember Musburger saying multiple times that LSU's going to need a big return here to shift the momentum. LSU's going to need a big return here. He said that at least 3 or 4 different times.
He did. But I have to say, that guy Fitzpatrick, I don't know who that guy is, but he was very good. I mean, he was always right down there with the punt, so there was really not a lot of chance to return. So, clearly... Kirkpatrick, what'd I say, Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, we're not talking Buffalo Bills football here, my friend.
Yeah, well, we may not be talking Buffalo Bills football for a while now. The draft special right there. So, you know, overall, I thought it was, I mean, maybe it was what we thought it was going to be. You know, a lot of people thought it was going to be mostly defensive. I mean, I don't know if we can really say it was low. I mean, it was low scoring, but, I mean, you know what I mean? There was a lot of field goals, but I guess the final score doesn't really reflect the low scoring feel of the thing. So,
yeah.
I guess we kind of got what we knew we were going to get in a way, but maybe somehow in the pageantry of the day, I felt like, hey, this game could be way more exciting than the first one.
And I mean, I didn't think it was going to be any more exciting. In fact, the 9-0 at halftime was basically exactly what I was expecting. Maybe I was expecting 6-3, but I was expecting another field goal shootout, if you will. But if I'm an LSU fan, I just have to be so pissed off right now, because the reason that we have this whole BCS thing, the reason that we have these bowls, you know, we have the formula up there that tells us who are the two best teams, is because they want to keep the emphasis, if you will, on the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And LSU, I mean, I guess Alabama lost to LSU as opposed to LSU beating Alabama in Alabama, but still, LSU won that game. And if you're putting all the emphasis on the regular season, then I don't know how you can have this rematch, even if they are the two best teams in the nation. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So if I'm an LSU fan right now, I'm just really, really upset at the fact that they put basically probably the only team that could actually beat LSU in this game when Alabama didn't win their championship, their conference championship game, when Alabama already lost to LSU in the regular season, which apparently is supposed to be of paramount importance. So if I'm an LSU fan, I've just got to be really upset right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think so for sure. And, I mean, Alabama lost at home, you know?
Exactly.
And so it's kind of like it was set up, like, here's your chance, Alabama. You have LSU at home. This is your chance to leapfrog. And that's kind of how people sold it with the whole game of the century thing. And then it was like, well, it actually doesn't really matter, you know? So if I'm an LSU fan, I'm definitely very upset. But, you know, at the same time, I think in a way that's positive, because every time, you know, one of these large SEC schools, and now you see a lot of these conference presidents are coming around to the plus one idea. I think it was when you started to see SEC coaches start to speak out. So in a way, I'm all for big SEC schools having some sort of gripe with the BCS system because that's the best chance. I mean, they, you know, they're bringing in the biggest revenues. They're winning all the championships. So if they're upset about it, I think it gives us the best chance of expanding the system. And I'll take a plus one game.
Yeah, I believe I saw somewhere on the bottom line or on ESPN.com, something along those lines, that the BCS commissioners or whoever's in charge of the BCS are going to discuss all sorts of format changes. Now, of course, discussion is not action, but hopefully it will lead to some change. I like the plus one. I don't know necessarily if we need a playoff, an 8-team or a 16-team playoff, even though it would be fun. I think the plus one it probably is the most beneficial option because you do get to keep the importance. In fact, you add some more importance to the other BCS bowl games, the Rose, the Fiesta, you know, those four ones as well. And you keep the paramount, the importance of the regular season intact with just a plus one. Whereas if you were to go to, you know, an 8 or a 16-team playoff, you would definitely lose a little importance on the regular season. So I'm just hoping that they do the right thing here and they add that plus one. But knowing the BCS, or knowing anything really, you know, they don't change it until it absolutely needs to be changed, so.
Yeah, no, that's 100% true. I mean, I'd say I lean toward an 8-team playoff, but I'm with you. I mean, I think a plus one will be good. And, you know, hopefully we can go to it and see what happens. But I think maybe perhaps, I don't know what the ratings are going to be on this game, but perhaps that will also influence it, you know, people not wanting to see rematches or something like that. So they'll try to do whatever. That also could influence them trying to do whatever.
Not only that, but the game was on ESPN, which is still a cable network as opposed to a national network, so I'm sure the ratings will take a hit regardless. It'll just be, I guess it'll just depend on how much of a hit they will take.
Well, I don't know, but anyway, we'll just have to see. We'll look at Nielsen next Backpod Radio.
Please tell me you saw that ridiculous SEC commercial throughout the game that was like, it showed like a little clip of the past five national championships. And then
oh, yeah, it was like you're watching
like,
the sixth or
yeah,
something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was a little bit, I don't know, a little bit unsportsmanlike, you know what I mean? Like, do you really want to rub it in the face of all the other conferences and all the other fans from all the other conferences that your conference really has no chance against our conference? I just thought, you know, why do you have to do that? We all know it. Why are you doing it?
I mean, the only thing that I could think of during this entire time watching this commercial was how much are you cheating? That's all I could think of. And I'm not saying the SEC cheats more than anyone else, because I mean, every big program in the nation, you know, has their fair of cheating, as has been seen with OSU, Ohio State, in the
for
past
sure,
year.
For sure. I mean, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. You know, that's
exactly,
how it is.
That is the saying. But I'm just thinking, I don't understand why. I guess maybe there's just better athletes in the South, and that's why they can compete, because they want to stay at home. Cause
I mean, I think on the one hand,
it's not as if the SEC has premier institutions academically. Now, of course, athletically, athletes probably are not looking, you know, big name athletes probably don't really care about the academics. But still, I mean, it's just got to be more athletes closer to home or something. I just don't understand how the SEC is supposedly so. I mean, they definitely do get the most athletes. I don't know about their brand of football or anything, but they do get the fastest and the strongest guys on average for any conference.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to say that, I mean, maybe that's true. I mean, I think obviously the states with the most players who are good are in the South, but you know, as we were talking the other day off air, I was saying to you, I really do think the changes in the TV contracts have made a difference in where players are going. I mean, I think that, you know, if you look at states like Ohio and the Midwest with all these MAC teams, I mean, if you're a second team all Ohio or whatever, a pretty good player, maybe recruited by Ohio State, a couple other Big Ten schools, but you don't necessarily know where you're going to fit in, I think there's a good chance that you might want to go to, say, a Toledo, where you know you're definitely going to play. You're going to be on those national TV random Tuesday night games, so people will definitely see you play. And, you know, you'll stand out. You'll have a chance to make it to the NFL. And I think, you know, especially now, guys, you see so many guys in the NFL who are from small schools and late-round guys and stuff like that. And so I think guys who really want to play and be seen are going. I mean, look at the state of Florida when you have USF now is kind of a good team. UCF, not that good, but kind of lurking. FIU starting a football team. And so you have so many more teams and you have so much more TV coverage. I think it really is starting to spread out, you know, if not primary talent, at least sort of secondary talent, so teams are less deep.
Well, there was that rumor a couple months ago about, I believe, Jim Tressel perhaps going to coach at Akron, which is one of those Mid-American Conference. I believe it's the Mid-American Conference. I'm not quite sure. MAC.
Look at Gus Malzahn going to Arkansas State and taking the running back from Auburn.
Yeah.
So there you go.
In any case, speaking of at the SEC and SEC players and Florida players in general, let's go right into the NFL playoffs. And you can't mention the NFL playoffs without mentioning Mr. Timothy Tebow.
Unfortunately, maybe. I don't even know. I got to say, at this point, it's just I was actually on the Tebow bandwagon for a little bit, but now, I mean, come on.
I just have to say I'm incredibly happy. I hate the Steelers. I hate all Pittsburgh teams. I think I know why, and most of my close friends do. Basically, we had a high school friend who he's very vocal about his Steelers when
extremely
they're good.
Vocal.
When they're good, he's extremely vocal. And being a Bills fan like myself, you know, I don't get that much bragging time with the friends. In any case,
just why are you going to kick them in when they're down? You know, like why are you going to just pump up your team to such a level? I feel like Steelers fans, like Yankee fans, just fans of teams that are dominant, that just, you know, I don't know. I just don't like their attitude. It's a little too haughty for me.
Exactly. In any case, so Tebow throws probably one of his best passes of the game in the first pass in overtime, and the wide receiver does the rest, just runs to the touchdown. I just remember, I was watching that live, I just remember sitting there yelling at the top of my lungs, being like, I can't believe this just happened. And it was just wonderful to see, especially since everyone thought that at the end of the game there, when the Broncos got the ball back with about 3:45 left, that Tebow was going to just lead them right back down the field in regulation and get that score. And they just got, I think they got stopped three and out. So it was just great to see Tebow winning it on the first play of overtime.
Yeah, I mean, it was entirely unexpected. I mean, I was very calm the whole game because I just couldn't believe it was happening. I was like, is this game, I don't know. I couldn't figure out what was going on, and I kept thinking, okay, there's no way Denver's going to win this game.
Well, then,
of a sudden, the game was over, and I was just kind of like, wow, I can't believe Denver won this game. I also think that Matt Prater should probably get more love.
Matt Prater, definitely. I was just going to say, Denver was in control the entire game except for about 8 minutes there in the fourth quarter, so it wasn't like Denver needed a miraculous comeback. In fact, it was Pittsburgh that needed to all of a sudden start doing some stuff in the fourth quarter.
And that's the thing; it seems so surreal. But you know, it makes me wonder. You know, missing Ryan Clark, 100 tackles this year. I mean, I wonder. You know, especially Polamalu. You know, was he able to make the plays he wanted to make because he didn't know that, you know, for sure he's going to have Clark there, who's going to be cleaning up mistakes and also, you know, sort of watching things and making sure that people don't slip through, you know, that safety net. So I wonder how much that hurt them.
Exactly. I don't know. I got nothing else to say. I mean, it was just great to see Tebow.
Yeah, and I mean, they did, and they lost, like, a ton of players. I mean, like, Casey Hampton going out early in the game. Yeah, it was just kind of like the walking wounded there. So, you know, I don't want to make it out. And that's the thing is I don't want it to, and this is why the Tebow thing's kind of killing me this week, even though before it didn't really bother me, is, you know, a lot of things happened there. I'm not saying that Pittsburgh, you know, played super great and just somehow lost it. But, you know, a lot of guys got hurt. It wasn't to me something like, oh, the Broncos are so great. Although, you know, I will say, Tebow throwing the ball, I thought was interesting, but we go back to Ryan Clark being out, and they played a lot without deep safeties. You know, I mean, they were that's not how they wanted to play, and Tebow,
he did his thing. The entire passing game was just air it out downfield, and hopefully your receiver will make the catch on that.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, I mean, the whole Broncos team, I mean, they are playing well as a team. You can't take that away from them. I mean, I think they are playing they have a lot of heart, but at the same time, it's hard for me to really believe they're good. Like, this is almost still kind of a feel-good story to me, and I'm just kind of waiting for them to, you know, they are who we thought they were, kind of exit from the playoffs.
Sort of thing. I mean, they're going to, there's no way they're going to come out of New England next week with a win, but.
No, I think they're going to get trounced.
It was just nice to see Tebow beat the Steelers. In the other AFC game, we had Bengals at Texans.
And I just want to say I called that, and this is a shout out to Andrew Cole, who I know is one of our listeners. He was not a believer in TJ Yates. I was a believer. I went to the game. I had that game.
Well, I'm glad that you're hyping yourself for
I am. I am. Well, I'm proud of that pick, you know, because a lot of people, they were counting out the Texans, but I stuck with them.
I mean, my boy JJ Watt really changing the momentum of the game there with his pick six, interception
work.
For a touchdown. So that was nice. I'm not going to say I watched a lot of this game, but I'm not surprised. I mean, the Bengals, they really kind of just backed their way in. No one really expected the Bengals to make the playoffs, and the fact that they did was, even though while not surprising, was just kind of like, okay, well, they're in, but really, they're not going to really do anything in the playoffs. So I'd say that's a very expectable win.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm the Bengals, actually, I'm very happy with my season. I mean, not only did people not expect them to make the playoffs, people did not expect them to be good at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was so much turmoil and the whole Carson Palmer holdout situation, whatever that was about. So, you know, if I'm them, I feel like, hey, you lost, but you had a pretty good run.
And you got
young
to
team.
Build on now, too. You got
yeah,
to
without
on.
A doubt. Without a doubt. But, you know, hey.
Yeah, so Houston goes to Baltimore next week.
Interesting matchup. I have to say, it's an interesting matchup. I think that, I mean, I'm going to pick Houston right now because I'm feeling good about Houston. That's not really, obviously, has nothing to do with whether they're going to win the game or not, but I feel positively about it. I don't have any X's and O's to back up why I feel like Houston's definitely going to win, but I just feel they're definitely going to win.
Well, it's really like-minded teams here, especially now that Schaub is out, so.
Yeah, and you know that Anquan Boldin, interestingly enough, is questionable for the Ravens, and I feel like that might not be good, even if he plays, if he's not 100%. I mean, we know Flacco.
Yeah, Flacco.
Yeah, he is what he is.
Flacco is Flacco. You might get a good game, or he might absolutely stink. The Ravens.
And T.J. Yates is balling right now. People just need to recognize that. He played in the pro-style offense in college. You know, I think that he can play. You know, he's one of those guys that maybe we didn't see it a lot. I mean, he played in the ACC and North Carolina was, I mean, kind of in the wilderness for a good bit of time that he was there. But nevertheless, I feel like if you look at how he's playing right now, he's playing well. He's not just managing the game.
Ray Lewis and Ed Reed are getting up there too, so.
Yeah, no, they are, but I mean,
they not have much left in the tank, so they might be playing a little extra hard this week, but
that's true. And the defense was still highly ranked this year, so I mean, you know, especially if you got veterans who are feeling like it's toward the end, I agree with you. You can't count out their motivation. There's no doubt about that. So, but I'm going with the Texans for sure. But I think that obviously the Ravens have a very good chance because their defense is still very legitimate.
Very true. In the NFC, we had the non-shocking Saints over Lions, even though the Lions did held the Saints in the first quarter and a half. But
they made it a little interesting.
Yeah, the Saints ended up turning it on there, and I mean, that's fairly expected. I don't know. There's really nothing much to say. The Lions, another young team that had a good year. Finally, Stafford was healthy the entire year, and he actually played incredibly well for the most part. But Saints were just too much.
Yeah, I mean, the Saints' offense is just it's just too potent. It's first in the league, you know. I mean, it's the Lions, I thought, put up a valiant effort. The score, it was lopsided, but, you know, they scored enough points that they didn't look like total scrubs, you know. And I think if you can come out of it with that, I guess, if you're the Lions, given the history you've had,
that's
a win for the franchise,
yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, though, that New Orleans-San Francisco matchup, I think, is interesting.
It's a real nice matchup. You've got a real defense against a real offense, but perhaps the most interesting part of the entire matchup is the fact that the 49ers play outdoors and the Saints are going to San Francisco. So we'll have to see just how much the elements play into effect in slowing down the New Orleans offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously they're not as good outside of the dome in general. I think, though, you know, San Francisco, good on defense as a whole, not really super great in passing defense. And obviously the Saints are most proficient at passing, so that's interesting. But the Saints don't have a very good run defense, and obviously
they
have a pretty good run off. So obviously they'll be able to control the clock there to a certain degree. But at the same time, I'm going to go with the Saints. I mean, I think that Teddy Ginn is questionable. Maybe he'll play, and I'm not saying he's super good. But with Alex Smith, I feel like any wide receiver who's like athletic, who's not in the game, that probably hurts you. And even if you can slow it down, they're not going to stop the Saints passing offense probably. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, I guess, what the Saints try to do on the run game, because obviously San Francisco can defend the run. But I just feel like the Saints will find a way to put up enough points. But it could very easily be sort of a tit-for-tat thing, since, you know, San Francisco can run, Saints can't defend the run. Saints can pass, San Francisco not too great in the pass. I want to say they're 16th, but...
Well, I'm sure Jim Harbaugh will be hoping for many windy gusts from the Bay while the Saints are on offense. So,
yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, hey, they have had a pretty – I mean, let me put it this way. I did not expect them to be in this situation. So,
They've had a real good season.
I don't want to count them out. Let me just put it that way.
Yep. On the other side, an absolute drubbing. I feel as though the Giants beating the Falcons 24-2, I feel as though – the fact that the Falcons only scored two is much more insulting than if they had scored zero.
I think it's extremely insulting. I actually had to miss a significant portion of that game, unfortunately, due to a conflict. And I just remember coming back in the fourth quarter and just being absolutely shocked that they had only scored 2 points. I mean, this is the Falcons coming in. Who offense that was, you know, there's, you know, they got the running game, they got Michael Turner, they got Julio Jones is coming on right now, Roddy White, you know, Matt Ryan, you know, Matty Ice. I mean, he got iced. There's no doubt about that.
Matty
they
Ice
destroyed him.
Exactly. Tony Gonzalez. I think Tony Gonzalez just might be the black plague in the playoffs. He's still not won, for as great as he is, he's still not won a single playoff game.
I think he should retire. I really do think he should retire now.
How crazy would that be if the Falcons went to the Super Bowl next year after Tony Gonzalez retired in this offseason?
That would be, if you're Tony Gonzalez, you'd have to feel horrible. Because you'd be thinking like, wow, I can't believe I retired. Everyone else would be like, thank God we got that guy out of here.
Exactly. He's like negative playoff winner.
I mean, it's something. I mean, Matt Ryan, too. I mean, I think we have to start to question his mental toughness. I mean, to only score 2 points. I mean, and listen, I know the Giants have the defensive line. They got some studs up there, but Atlanta was supposed to have one of the best offensive lines in the league, you know, so to then get completely shut down like that, I feel is really just a sign of not the skill of the players, but the will of the players to actually, you know, go out there and win the game.
The Giants lost. The Giants were swept by the Redskins this year.
That's right. And that is killing me. The whole time I'm watching that game, for the bit I did in the beginning, in the first quarter, in the fourth quarter, it was like an ice pick just grinding in my stomach. So I was like, I can't believe that we looked like all pros against the Giants this year. Mm-hmm. And here they are with maybe a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And yet again, my skin's killing me. But, you know, again, effective quarterbacks. There it is right there. Eli Manning. I got to say, maybe it's just me. I feel Eli Manning is motivated by Peyton being out. Like, you know, the shadow is gone, and he's really trying to make his mark right now to show people that he's not just the other Manning. I like how he's playing.
Just in case anyone didn't know, Eugene is a big Redskins fan.
Without a doubt. So,
So the Giants, lots of talk now. Giants going into Green Bay next week. They're going to try to have a repeat performance of the Super Bowl from a few years back where they beat the undefeated Patriots, who were an offensive juggernaut, all this nonsense. I don't see it happening. Although, the stars are kind of aligning for the Giants maybe insensitive as this is going to sound. Apparently, the Packers offensive coordinator, his son was found dead today.
Yeah. I know. That's rough. It's got to take a toll on the team. Exactly. You know, so that's going to, I mean, they could either rally around that, though, and that could really power them, or it could really take them down. So it's going to be a testament, I think, to the coaching and the leadership on the team, how which way they go. And, you know, Charles Woodson and Greg Jennings might not play, so that could also affect them.
Yeah, the coaching especially, because I mean, you know, most of the coaching is preparation. And, I mean, your head is not going to be right if you lose someone that close. To you. So.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think a lot of it then depends on Mike McCarthy. He plays a heavy role in the offense, so that also may make a difference. And when you got Aaron Rodgers in there, you know, he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So I'm taking the Packers.
Yeah, I like the Packers as well. I love my boy Aaron Rodgers, who the Aaron Rodgers to Jordy Nelson connection won me a fantasy championship this year.
Oh, I feel you. So you got to ride. You got to ride with the man.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah. Let's shift gears a little bit away from the pigskin and the gridiron
to the hardwood.
Let's talk a little NBA, and let's just talk about the general quality or lack thereof of the game this year so far.
I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, the NBA this year, you know, the Hawks beat the Nets tonight. That's the third time they beat them so far this year. I mean, there's only been, what, 9 games? I know. So it's kind of like some of these games are like a scrimmage in a way almost, because these bad teams are so bad. And defense all over the league, especially in the top teams in the Western Conference, is really, other than the Lakers, is just not even, I mean, it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, defense is all effort and win. When you're running on half a tank, you know, how much are you going to give on the defensive end?
Yeah, that's true. There's only 3 teams right now that are holding teams to 89 points or under, and that's Chicago, Philadelphia, and Indiana. So, obviously, defense is not a – I mean, obviously in the NBA people are going to score 90 points, but still it's clear when you see, like, every top team in a division in the Western Conference is somewhere in the 20s. In almost all the defensive stats.
Mm-hmm. And all those teams that you just mentioned are relatively young, and especially in the case of Chicago and Indiana, are fairly deep. So that definitely has to help them defensively. Being the only Toronto Raptors fan south of the border.
That's true.
It's
the only one.
It's very weird to me to see the Raptors getting crushed by like 20 points in one night, and then tonight they beat the T-Wolves, I think, by about 14 points or something. Like, it's just really weird, because in a regular season they would just be so much worse, and I want them to be bad so that they can get another high draft pick this year. But they're winning these games. Like, all their wins are like blowouts, and all their losses are blowouts. It's just really, really weird to see.
Yeah, I think if they're going to start to fade. I mean, I think, you know, the toll of the season. Well, I mean, first of all, clearly some people just weren't working in the lockout. We know that. I think clearly teams didn't have a lot of time to practice with new players. And also, I think the back-to-back-to-back schedule is just, people aren't really fully acclimated. But I think as the season goes on, and even, like, you know, young athletic players start to wear down a little bit, skill will start to, the cream will definitely start to rise to the top,
yeah,
I think.
Skill and coaching and preparation will.
So the Wizards may never win a game. That's what that has to. I mean, they are atrocious. And JaVale McGee, okay, horrible stat. You talk about stats that are bad. He leads. He's tied for the league lead in blocks. But if you've ever watched the Wizards play this season, since they're always getting crushed, these blocks are like the most inconsequential things of all time. It's like a guy goes lazy to the rim when they're up by 15 on the Wizards. And then not only will JaVale McGee get the block, but then he'll do like some, you know, grit on people, like some Chris Webber type thing, setting the jaw and, like, you know, really celebrating as if he's done something when the Wizards are just getting destroyed and the whole building knows they're not going to win the game. It's unbelievable.
JaVale McGee might be the most overrated player in the NBA right now. That guy, he gets so much pub for some reason, and he's just...
It's because he's athletic as a big man. But, I mean, he's not athletically good. I mean, he can just... He's kind of gangly and can make interesting plays and interesting blocks, but he can't consistently score.
Well, here's the real question of the season. How many more games are left before we're basically seeing NBDL teams playing in the NBA against other NBDL teams?
I mean, I have to say we may be getting there, because you got to think that if you're one of these really bad teams, your motivation is going to be sapped pretty fast because there's less games. I mean, not a, you know, 20, what is it? There's 66 games this year. Mm-hmm. So usually what, there's 82.
Yep.
You know, you lost a significant amount of games there. So I think at a certain point, you just get, I mean, like say a team like the Wizards in 4 weeks has lost 17 games. I mean, that's kind of got to make you feel like, yeah, well, that's, you know, I'm really in trouble here.
That's a buzzkill right there.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets, I mean, it just seems like a lot of teams, I just don't know what's going to keep them going. I mean, I guess you could say that every year about the bottom of the league teams, but I don't know. I mean, it almost feels like some players are just kind of mailing it in because they know it's a short season.
If I'm one of these really, really bad teams, why don't I just trade for failed former first-round picks? Like, if I'm the Wizards, why don't I just trade a second-round pick for Hashim to beat? And then just start him every game. Just see if there is even the tiniest bit of skill, NBA skill, in that man. Because there's no way that you're going to be losing a lot in a trade for something like that. Plus, it's not like you're going to be spending a lot of money past this year. And if, in fact, you do get something out of him, you're like, oh, wait a minute, this guy actually can play. Maybe I can turn him into something good, or maybe I can just keep him. So if I'm one of these just really bad teams, I'm just trying to stockpile as many failed first-round picks within the past, like, 4 years just to see if they can give me something.
I'm just trying to lose a lot of games and find a way to get into the lottery. I mean, I know they made the lottery to keep teams from tanking, but I would just tank just for the chance to get in the lottery generally. If I'm the Wizards or the Nets, you need another high pick. You need something that if you say to a player, if you say to Dwight Howard, like, okay, we're going to re-sign Deron Williams, we're going to bring you in here, and then we were so bad this year that we're going to bring in Jared Sullinger. I don't even know. That's probably not even good. I haven't thought about that. But anyway, yeah. You know, like something, some other third piece, and it has to be a rookie because they would have a, you know, the contract that's going to be credible to make a big star believe you can make it work under the cap.
Now,
so
today, I believe it was reported, speaking of trades, I believe it was reported that Dwight Howard was again reiterated that he would like to be traded. And
no, not just reiterated. He said that his position had not changed, despite the that he still wanted to be traded, despite the fact that he'd said he wanted to stay in Orlando.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly he doesn't know what's going on. I think
clearly he doesn't want to stay. That's all it is. I think he stays until the All-Star game because they won't want him to get booed in the All-Star game in Orlando, and he's gone.
If I'm Dwight Howard, I'm not trying to leave Orlando simply for one reason.
What's that one reason?
Mad MILFs. I mean, come on, really? You're Dwight Howard. You are an Adonis, a model of physical perfection. You're a black guy.
That's just horrible knowledge of the country right there, dude. If he goes to New York or L.A., his percentages for women of all types will increase exponentially.
Of all types, sure. I'm just saying, this guy's got to be cleaning up down there, right? I mean,
I don't know, though, because a ton of athletes live in Orlando.
In any case, what I was going to say before I went off on that little tangent.
No doubt about that. Well, you know, I understand that you have strong feelings about America's entertainment capital, you know.
Yeah, Orlando. No. What I was going to say was the Magic have agreed to allow, I believe, the Lakers, the Mavericks, and the Nets to talk trade, right?
Yes, that's what it is.
And so are we... I guess the Nets are probably the best team that at least they can offer the most to get him. I'm just wondering what the Mavericks could really offer. Because they're not going to be trading Dirk, of course. And no one's going to want Jason Kidd because he's 50.
Well, maybe the Mavericks' play is to just say, well, we're not going to make a trade push for you. Just wait it out to the end of the year and we'll just sign you to a big contract.
Yeah, but if he wants to get traded...
Yeah,
I mean,
but he may. But
I
if the contract
if the Mavericks,
they're offering is right, he might not want to get traded that bad.
If you're the Mavericks, though, you're not going to want to. I mean, you can't really wait if you really, really want him. Now, if you're just in there trying to, you know, hike up the price on him, then of course that's one thing. But if you actually really want him, I don't think there's any way you can wait because I think he definitely will be traded to somewhere.
I think that's true. I just don't see what they have to offer that they could possibly feel would be as attractive to Orlando as what they're going to get from either the Nets or the Lakers. I mean, with the Nets, you have the allure of a high draft pick right there. I guess what Brook Lopez has heard or whatever now, right? So I don't know if he's really an asset anymore. So maybe that does hurt the Nets a little bit. But the Lakers obviously have the best trade pieces. But apparently they seem – I don't know if they want to make that move.
I mean, I'm not going to – I would never trade Dwight Howard for Andrew Bynum, Mr. Glass Andrew Bynum out there.
I mean, I would never do that too, but what if they trade Gasol and Bynum? What if they just go all in on Dwight Howard?
I mean, I don't know. That. I don't see how that would really improve them, because then they would have to start Troy Murphy and Josh McRoberts or some ridiculous.
I don't know. I just kind of feel like maybe you just really want to get Howard in there as your centerpiece and then work it out once you got him there. Mm-hmm. Because obviously Kobe's on the downswing. I think that you got to start to think like, okay, this thing is already halfway blown up. I mean, we got Ebanks starting in here. You got Capono getting time on the court. I mean, pretty much anyone is on there. You know, you got Blake, shades of the ACC circa last decade.
Yeah,
out there running around. So you know, you got to think, get into Dwight Howard, and then he wants to be in LA, so you can sell him on like, all right, we're gonna get you in here. Then we got to make a couple moves. So we got to, you got to hang in there for a year, year and a half, 2 years, and just make some stuff happen, respectable season, and then we'll work it out.
What if the Clippers try to trade for him? Do they have the cap room for that? Because that would be, because they still have a few pieces left. Like, I think I would rather have DeAndre Jordan for 82 games than Andrew Bynum for 40.
I mean, I don't know if they have the cap room. I know that they originally, before they traded for Chris Paul, I had heard their name mentioned in the Dwight Howard mix, mm-hmm. but I kind of assumed, and of course I don't know, that when they got Paul that they could only really make one big play, you know, like they weren't in the market for two. They weren't in a New York Knicks type situation. Mm-hmm. Well, and the Knicks are horrible, by the way. Can we just say that?
I mean, D'Antoni needs to be fired immediately. He is the absolute wrong coach for this team.
Well, they don't even try to play defense at all. And I think they're leading. Stoudemire is leading them in field goal percentage, but he's only shooting like 44%.
Well,
I
watched the Knicks game the other day, and I mean, they just Amari takes off the shots. He's not even open. He just like shoots it.
Yeah.
And Carmelo is just trying to. I think Carmelo is literally trying to break the floorboards by how much he dribbles the ball.
Yeah.
All he dribbles it, but he doesn't go anywhere. He just dribbles and dribbles and dribbles, and then he kind of runs to a side and shoots like a fall away jumper.
Yeah, I mean, his game is like, it's like an all ISO game. I mean, and that's the thing is, I think Carmelo Anthony might actually be too good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he has too much natural skill, and I don't think his game is as developed as it could be. I mean, you know, who the hell am I to say that, right? But it just seems like he can definitely beat any player in the NBA one-on-one.
Yeah.
Like, we all know that. And I think he knows that. And so he always just looks to get the ball and then beat somebody. And I think that, unfortunately, that inhibits them having an actual offense, you know?
Yeah. It's just painful to see, for the most part.
Tyson Chandler not having a huge impact, really.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's not scoring, but they weren't expecting him to score.
Yeah, but I mean, their defense is still atrocious. I mean, obviously, if no one else plays defense, you can't really do
one
much.
One guy isn't going to be. This isn't college basketball where you can just park the center right under the rim and have them swat balls.
True.
All day, so, in any case, I think that's going to do it for the NBA. Right? Do we have anything else? NBA.
No, I think we're good.
All right, so we've got a little segment coming up. It's called Cups of
Joe. Actually, I will say one more thing. I do want to kind of actually gloat a little bit. I saw that Tim Duncan is really only averaging 10 points right now, mm-hmm. and I like to see that Tim Duncan is really on the downside of his career.
Well, I mean, he's like 36.
I know. I'm not a fan, so I just need to stick that in there.
All right. Speaking of ACC from a couple decades ago, in any case, new segment, Cups of Joe. Basically, this is just us. We've got a couple topics that we didn't feel we either had enough time to discuss and or we just wanted to briefly mention before we ended the podcast. So let's kick off Cups of Joe with What do you want to do? Which one do you want to do first? Let's do the PSU hire.
Yeah, let's knock out the PSU hire.
Another Patriots offensive coordinator hired to be a head coach, this time in the college ranks. We've been talking about this for a couple months. Is this really the hire that's going to move the needle nationally?
No, and I think really, I want to be upset about it, but since I don't really know who said no, it's hard for me to say. I mean, maybe this was the best they could do, and they've got a guy who is a highly regarded offensive coordinator. Some people say, well, you know, the Patriots offense was really good when he was the coordinator, but every coordinator under Tom Brady, you know. So, but whatever. Obviously, they have a guy who has a reputation who's coached in college, so maybe it was the best they could do. I was thinking Jim Caldwell was going to emerge with all the turmoil going on with the Colts. I mean, he used to coach at Penn State for a long time, a lot of ties to the school, been a head coach in college, head coach in the pros. Now, I don't know if he wanted the job. Obviously, they're still saying that he may keep this Colts job, and he's meeting with Jim Irsay, but I don't know. I thought he was going to emerge. But to me, Bill O'Brien, not going to do it. I think it hurts their recruiting. I think you've got people like LeVar Arrington, major alumni, who aren't going to put in work. So, you know, I think they're going to lose a lot. But I'm not really sure, you know, if there was nothing, if they really messed up or they just couldn't do any better.
No, Bill O'Brien has a long, storied coaching history in the ACC, as he was apparently a couple position coaches for Georgia Tech before moving to Maryland for a year or two, and then Duke before eventually ending up in the NFL. I was telling you a couple months ago that the Penn State coach was going to have to be like a big hire, and this clearly, I don't think this really does it. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It seems like this guy. It seems like this guy was just hired as kind of a, clearly we don't know who said no, but it seems like this guy is just there, and it's like, well, if he can give us some solid seasons, then that's great, but we don't expect to compete while Bill O'Brien is the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, that may be it. I mean, maybe they just kind of want to muddle through for a while and maybe hope people kind of forget what's going on and then try to make a bigger hire down the road when it seems more attractive again.
All right, next topic. NHL realignment. The delay in the NHL realignment because the NHLPA did not sign off on it. First off, let me just ask you, did you like the realignment plan from the NHL?
I mean, I thought it mostly made sense. I mean, you had to get Winnipeg out of the Caps division, the former Southeast division. That made no sense. I think it was, you know, it was a little more geographically sound, I mean, in that way and other ways. So I think it made sense, and it would have been... I mean, I'm not sure it would make a huge difference in, you know, how things turn out game-wise, but I think it's just a little more rational.
Yeah, it was four conferences. They were definitely much more geographically aligned. And then I guess the main sticking point was for the players was that they didn't feel that it was competitively balanced due to the fact that two conferences would have eight teams and two conferences would have seven teams. And I guess, you know, you would make the playoffs regardless of which, you know, of winning your conference, all that sort of stuff.
But right, yeah.
I'd have to say I do like the fact that the NHL was thinking ahead for this just because, you know, you usually don't see such radical realignment plans. I mean, the MLB was talking about radical things, and then all they ended up doing was adding the Houston Astros to the AL West. So, you know, I mean, it was nice to see that the NHL was willing to try something different, and I kind of hope that they do in fact implement this plan, and the NHLPA does sign off of it, because they did a good job of keeping old-time rivalries intact, and, you know, I would like to see how it ended up.
Yeah, I think they'll make probably some minor tweaks and put it in there. I mean, you've got when you've got all these random teams, it's hard to make it come out, you know, just right, everything rounded off. There's probably going to be a little something that's, you know, annoying any way you cut it. So I think it works out. I think it will end up happening. I think NHL realignment will be a good thing. I think, you know, maybe, I mean, I don't know. I kind of think that anything that makes more sense, that makes, like, if the conferences make a little more sense to people, has the chance to make hockey a little bit more popular. Anything that makes it easier to pick up the game and, like, you know, if you like a team in your town to kind of, I mean, even if you don't know anything about the teams, it's kind of areas you know. I don't know. I think anything like that can help the game back some market share.
Hold up. I'm going to have to take some brownies out of the oven. Hold on a second.
Wow, Bagman.
All right, we're back. I thought some brownies were burning. They were not.
Yes, Bagman, your domestic game. Step your domestic game up, man. You got to keep a track of what you got in the oven here.
Well, I told David to take him out, so I wasn't quite sure if he had or not. It sounded like...
So you're saying that David Milkus dropped the ball. Is that what you're saying?
No, that he actually did take them out. Just I know David Milkus can be somewhat forgetful at times.
So you're saying you expected him to drop the ball, and so you had no idea if they were burning. You just thought, oh, David probably dropped the ball.
I was smelling lots of brownie smell, and I was getting worried that they were burning. This is why I had to go check on them.
Okay.
In any case, back to the cup of Joe. And brownies go amazingly with a cup of coffee. Of course.
There's no doubt about that. We got Ryan Braun, NL MVP.
Yes, the NL MVP.
Convicted.
The steroids, caught for steroids, 50 games. He's appealing. No one's ever won an appeal.
All I know is if these baseball appeals are anything like the cycling appeals, there's no chance I believe them. I mean, who is the guy? Was it Floyd Landis with the blood doping thing and the doppelganger? I mean, you know, these people come up with the craziest explanations in cycling for why they definitely. I mean, like I ate some tainted meat. I mean, it's so transparently false. Every cyclist, I ate some transparent meat, and so you know, Ryan Braun coming with the. You know, I didn't knowingly do it, or I think that's his appeal, is one of those, I didn't know it was going into my body, but come on, I mean,
this is,
it's a huge blow to baseball. This is a huge blow to baseball, because I have to say, I felt that this season did a lot, and the last season too, with the domination of the pitchers, but the past two seasons did a lot to sort of get over that hump, not totally, but it seemed like a new era in baseball, and I think this to the MVP, a guy that people like on a young, up and coming team, or not even up and coming, a young team that really is contending, you know, this is just kind of a blow. I mean, and the commissioner's old team too, you know,
He's a fan favorite, and not because he's just really good, because he's actually just a fan favorite, you know, so. It is disappointing.
He's good. He's actually just a fan favorite.
Well, nice. I mean, he's clear.
He's an affable guy. I'm with you.
Let's be honest. The only reason Giants fans love Barry Bonds was because he was good.
Yeah,
there's no way anyone else was loving Barry Bonds.
That's definitely true.
No other reason. But, yeah, it is. I'm interested to see how the appeal process goes, what they find out, all that kind of stuff. For me, I don't really... if he's guilty, I don't really care. If he's not guilty, I'm like, all right, that's good, because I didn't want him to be guilty, but still, it doesn't really do anything for me. I mean, just with the whole past era of the whole steroids tainting thing, I just don't even really care anymore.
Yeah, no, it's hard for me to feel like, this is so shocking, but I don't know, I am a little sad about it, because I felt like, for baseball, this was a setback in what I thought was some renewed popularity for the game. But, hey, it is what it is.
All right. Last topic here. There were...
The Mayweather fight.
Yes. There were rumors that due to Floyd Mayweather's jail sentence not starting until June, that his May fight date would, in fact, be against Pacquiao before he was incarcerated. But I guess you have found out otherwise. Yes,
fight fans, I know you may be excited. The Pacquiao fight this weekend I know seemed very close, but you're going to have to temper that excitement, because it looks like Mayweather is going to sign maybe in the next few days. They're saying by Friday they're going to decide, but they're looking like they want to sign for May 5th, Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Mm-hmm. Now, Guerrero's coming off a shoulder surgery. I think he's 29-1-1. He also has never really – he's going to have to come up and wait. So I think for him, even though he's a fighter that's known as a good fighter, it's a challenge. A lot of people don't know him. I always feel like in a fight like this, you know it's a bad sign when the challenger has to sell why it's a good fight. He's selling that he's a Mexican and it's Cinco de Mayo. I think the wild card in this right now, where there's two wild cards. On the one hand, you've got Saul Alvarez, Canelo Alvarez. This young kid is really the pride of Mexico right now as a fighter. He is huge in Mexico. He could sign, also managed by Golden Boy, who manages Guerrero. Now, that would be a huge fight in Vegas on Cinco de Mayo. And then Bob Arum going to Manila to meet with Pacquiao, and Pacquiao has told people that he wants to push Arum to make this fight happen. So I think there will be a fight May 5th, without a doubt. I think the Mayweather people may be toying with Pacquiao and Arum by dangling out these Golden Boy fights to really make them push hard and sign the fight this weekend. So it's not dead, but just don't be surprised, fight fans, if you wake up on Friday and, you know, the ghost is getting ready to get in there with Money Mayweather.
For Mayweather, this would be the perfect time for him to fight because, I mean, coming out of jail, as we've seen with at least Jamal Lewis, in the NFL, when you come out of jail, you kind of lose most of the juice that you had when you went in. So, for anyone hoping for a Pacquiao fight, this might be the greatest time, just because Mayweather will be in peak condition and he might want to go out from boxing with a bang. Because if this doesn't happen, you know, once he gets out of jail, it'll still take another solid, at least, 6 to 9 months just to get him back up to fighting shape and ready to fight someone like a Pacquiao. So,
yeah.
So you've really got to be hoping that this fight happens on this date, or else it's just going to be two old guys finally fighting after, a decade of hype.
There's no doubt. I mean, both guys are sort of entering the downside of their career, and this fight will get progressively worse as time goes on. I think you're right. You know, coming out of shape, I mean, it's hard to measure your nutrition as well in prison. So, you know, your weight could be an issue, whether you're under or overweight. So I think it's going to take an extended time for Floyd to come back. I think if this fight doesn't happen now, it's never going to happen for sure. But I'm holding out a little bit of hope because there's so much money on the line here, and honestly, Floyd is going to need money with all his legal troubles, so.
Yeah. But yeah, I think on that note, that will do it for this particular bag pod.
That's true. Well, this is going to be the first one that goes up on the site, yeah. inthebag.com. Why don't you give people a little flavor of what inthebag.com is bringing out here?
Well, first off, the website URL is in-the-bag with two G's .com.
Bag with two G's.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I do not have any money to buy In the Bag without hyphens from the person that owns it. So
that's all right. This is a highly literate audience.
We've gone with the hyphens. Basically, what you're going to find there is hopefully you'll find some off-the-beaten-path opinions and observations from particular particular media outlets, particular sports, looking at sports, looking at movies, looking at TV, video games, random stuff like that. We will be having multiple updates a day, so check that out just in case you miss something. It looks like, at least from the onset, it will be heavily sports and heavily movie-based, but as time goes on, hopefully we will be able to get some other interest up there.
And can people follow you on Twitter? Can people follow your new endeavor on Twitter?
People can follow me on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm at In the Bag, no hyphens, with two G's on Twitter. And then Facebook is just In the Bag with two G's as well. But if you go to the website on the front page, and I believe on every other page, you can there's a follow on Twitter button, which you can click, which will automatically follow the site on Twitter. And, of course, there is a like on Facebook button, which, you know, I think that's self-explanatory as well. So just head over to the website. Enjoy what is up. Hopefully we'll get some regular contributions, a couple regular weekly articles on there that people will enjoy. But, yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds good. That sounds good. It looks like we got a lot of things popping here. That's in-the-bag with two G's.com. You can check that out. Get the podcast. Get the updates. Follow it on Twitter at In the Bag.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully, this podcast will be up on iTunes shortly. Just waiting for that sweet, sweet Apple approval, baby.
That's the first step to world domination. Once you get on iTunes, forget about it. So get on board. Get on the bandwagon right now because when we blow up, we will act like we don't know you, without a doubt.
You also want to be on the ground level so you can be like, yo, you remember when In the Bag was just first coming up? Yeah, I was all up on top of that, son.
No doubt about that.
In any case, we'll be coming back to you guys soon. So we'll see you guys later.
All right, till next time.